Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribhara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribhara Dhari. Shoshoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Shoshoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vana Chari. Jamuna Tira Vana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribhara Dhari. Jashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vana Chari. Jamuna Tira Vana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivrat Jagacharya Stotra Sataji Srimad A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Punam Hansa Parivrat Jagacharya Stotra Sataji Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai. Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prems the Kahos Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Sham Kundradha Kunigiri Gurdhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Tham Ki Jai, Navadvip Tham Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Ki Jai, Gangamayi Ki Jai, Jamanamayi Ki Jai, Tulsi Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Samavemata Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande. Yeah, that should be better, huh? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Phone reminds me to ask for a cell phone check. All the cell phones. Check, check, check. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 11, text 35. Sa
Esha
Nadaloke Asmin Avatirnaha Samayaya Reme Sri Ratna Utasto Bhagavan Prakrito Yata Saesha Nadaloke Smin Avatirna Swamayaya Reme Sri Ratna Kutasto Bhagavan Prakrito Yata Saesha Nadaloke Smin Avatirna Swamayaya Reme Sri Ratna Kutasto Bhagavan Prakrito Yata. Saesha Nadaloke Smin Avatirna Swamayaya Reme Sri Ratna Kutasto Bhagavan Prakrito Yata. Saesha Nadaloke Smin Avatirna Swamayaya Reme Sri Ratna Kutasto Bhagavan Prakrito Yata Saesha Nadaloke Smin Avatirna Swamayaya Reme Sri Ratna Kutasto Bhagavan Prakrito Yata.
More.
Saesha Nadaloke Smin
Avatirna Swamayaya
Avatirna Swamayaya
Reme Sri Ratna Kutasto
Reme Sri Ratna Kutasto
Bhagavan Prakrito Yata
Bhagavan Prakrito Yata. Reme Sri Ratna Kutasto Bhagavan Prakrito Yata Saesha Nadaloke Smin Avatirna Swamayaya Reme Sri Ratna Kutasto Bhagavan Prakrito Yata Saesha Nadaloke Smin Avatirna Swamayaya
Rene Sriratna Kutasto
Bhagavan Prakruto Yata
Saesha Nadalokesmin Avatirna Swamayaya Reme Sriratna Kutasto Bhagavan Prakruto Yata
Saha
Saha
He
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Eshaha. All these. Nadaloke.
On
this planet.
Of human beings.
Asmin.
On this.
Avatirna.
Having appeared.
Swa.
Personal.
Internal.
Mayaya.
Causeless mercy.
Reme,
enjoyed.
Stri Ratna,
woman who is competent
to become a wife of the Lord.
Kutastaha,
among
Bhagavan,
the personality of Godhead.
Prakritaha,
mundane.
Yata,
as if it were.
That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, appeared on this planet by his internal potency and enjoyed himself amongst competent women as if he were engaging in mundane affairs. Purport. The Lord married and lived like a householder. This is certainly like a mundane affair. But when we learn that he married 16,108 wives and lived with them separately in each and every palace, certainly it's not mundane. Therefore, the Lord, living as a householder amongst his competent wives, is never mundane, and his behavior with them is never to be understood as mundane sex relation. The women who became the wives of the Lord are certainly not ordinary women, because to get the Lord as one's husband is the result of many, many millions of births, tapasya, austerity. When the Lord appears on different lokas or planets, or on this planet of human beings, he displays his transcendental pastimes just to attract the conditioned souls to become his eternal servitors, friends, parents, and lovers, respectively, in the transcendental world, where the Lord eternally reciprocates such exchanges of service. Service is pervertedly represented in the material world and broken untimely, resulting in sad experience. The illusion-living being conditioned by material nature cannot understand, out of ignorance, that all our relations here in the mundane world are temporary and full of inebrieties. Such relations cannot help us be happy perpetually. But if the same relation is established with the Lord, then we are transferred to the transcendental world after leaving this material world, material body, and become eternally related with him in the relation we desire. Om Gyana Tumirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Trakshun Militam Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jaina Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Shapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Padakamanam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Shagrashatam Shahagana Raganatan Vitamstam Sajivam Shadvaitam Shavadhutam Krishna Sehitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Pada Saganavalita Sri Vishakam Vitamstha Hey Krishna Gurana Sindho Dina Bandho Gurupate Gopesha Gopinatanta Radha Kanta Kamshuna Gaurangi Radhe Yandane Shri Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pramani Raipriya Pancha Gopatri Bishcha Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gauru Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Sa esha nadalokesmin, avatirna swamayaya. Reme stri ratna kutasto, bhagavan prakrito yata. The ladies on the top, on the rooftops are saying these things. That's what it is. No? Who's speaking?
He's entered the palace and he's This is seen on page 50. The insuperable ecstasy was so strong that the queens who were shy first embraced the Lord within the inmost recesses of their hearts. Then they embraced him visually.
Okay. So now it's Sutta Goswami speaking. Okay. Saisha Nadalo Kesman. Ah, so he's right. He's entering his household, so now these things are being explained. Nadalo Kesman Avatirna Swamaya. This is in the old Monopoly game, there used to be a square called the jail. And you could go to jail for various offenses. But then there was another way to go that was called just visiting, where you landed on that square and there were no consequences. So that's Krishna's position. We're in the jail. This material world is prison, a place of birth and death and so many troubles. And we're stuck here. But Krishna is, when he comes, he's just visiting. He's not coming because he's obliged to come. He's not under the laws of material nature. Maya jyokshena prakriti suyate satyacharam. Maya is working under his power, under his direction. So there's no way that Maya can force him to accept a material body or material conditioned life. So when he comes, swamaya, avatirna, avatirna, avatar, it means he descends from the higher plane, from the spiritual world. Avatirna, swamaya, by his own power, his internal potency, atmamaya svajamyaham, in the Bhagavad Gita. We don't come by our own potency. If the governor goes to jail, he drives in his own car. If we go to jail, we're hauled in a police van. So Krishna comes by his own power, not because someone else is forcing him to come. Swamaya, by his own potency, his internal potency. Swamaya, by his own power. And another meaning of maya is mercy. The Lord comes by his own mercy to uplift the conditioned souls and to give a glimpse of what's going on in the spiritual world. He's not obliged to do it, but he's, out of his causeless mercy, out of his compassionate nature, he chooses to come to the material world to show these attractive pastimes so that the conditioned souls will want to revive their eternal relationship with him. Re me Sri Ratna
kutasto. Prakritya, Bhagavan prakrito yata. He's Bhagavan. He's the personality of Godhead. He shouldn't be misunderstood to be an ordinary human being. He's in a different category, Bhagavan. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti, Shabdyate. The Bhagavan is the absolute truth. He's not at all in the same category as the ordinary living entities. But Prakrito Yata, he appears to perform the activities of an ordinary human being. Babhuva Prakrita Shishu. In the Bhagavatam it said that after appearing in the prison house of Kamsa with forearms and Shankachakra Gada Padma and helmet and all the signs of Vishnu, Babhuva Prakrita Shishu, he transformed himself into the form of like that of a child of this world. Janma karma cha me divyam. His birth and activities are all transcendental. Certainly birth is transcendental. No one is born with Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. You see in the medical journal that, you know, someone was born with Shankha Chakra Gada, you know, it's out of the question. But Krishna was born that way, or made his appearance that way, with all these wonderful signs, and then also spoke to his parents. The ordinary child doesn't say anything, just cries. But Krishna gave some instruction to his parents and agreed, yes, I'll better that you carry me over there so that Kamsa won't get me. That also is playing the role. He's keeping pace. When he plays like a child, the features are like those of a child, although sometimes extraordinary. It's a mixture, a charming mixture that Krishna puts on. On one side, he keeps pace with the ordinary world, and on the other side, he does things that no ordinary human being can do. On one side, he herds cows, which is like, you know, you see kids all over the place in India with sticks in their hands, and they're herding cows. That's very ordinary business. It's not even outstanding, you know, a prince or some great personality. Krishna plays as a cowherd, most ordinary occupation. But then again, he lifts the Govardhan Hill, which no other child could do. No ordinary child could do. Because Bhagavan, although he's playing, therefore Sukadeva Goswami speaks that verse. What? Itam. Kena. Punya Punja, that he may be seen by the ordinary man as being like an ordinary man, but these cowherd boys who are playing with him have gained the opportunity to do that after millions and millions of births. They're not playing with an ordinary boy. They're playing with the Param Brahma. There's another prayer where someone says that let others. What is that? Let others worship, follow the Upanishads or the system of worship. What is that? Sukhamit today.
I haven't memorized the verse, but it's by the. the poet who met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
That let others follow the various religious principles and worship according to the Upanishads or whatever. I just want to worship Nanda Maharaj because Param Brahma is crawling in his yard like an ordinary child. Not that there's an ordinary child crawling in his yard and he's a very nice child. Param Brahma. Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adi Devam Ajam Vipam. Krishna is the Vipum, the greatest person, Purusha Shashvata, Divya, the eternal, transcendental personality of Godhead. Param Brahma, Param Dharma, Pavitra. Completely pure, Pavitra, Paramam, Bhavan. So he's Bhagavan under all circumstances. Whether he's herding cows or lifting Govardhan Hill or whatever he's doing, he's always Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But appearing sometimes as if, yata, as if an ordinary human being. As if an ordinary human being. Reme Sriratna Kutastho. And enjoying with the most qualified women, Sriratna, the jewels among women, Reme, enjoying. But Krishna has no interest in material enjoyment. Krishna doesn't go slumming, enjoying the garbage of this material world is not Krishna's business. He says, this is apara prakriti, earth, water, fire, air. This is not enjoyable, this material energy. So when Krishna is enjoying, his enjoyment is on the spiritual platform. Or from another point of view, even if we think Krishna is enjoying the material energy, for Krishna it's spiritual. For us, material energy is the source of entanglement. For Krishna, there's no difference, material, spiritual, it's all transcendental. For us, the cloud is a covering of the sun. For the sun, the cloud is just another one of its products. It's not covered. So even if we think that Krishna is enjoying material nature is spiritual from Krishna's point of view. Apart from that, we hear from Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna never gets involved with the material nature. We're reading from Brahma Sanghita. When he wants to create pregnancy in material nature, he sends his glance, his time energy, in the form of his glance, personified by Shambhu, Lord Shiva. So there's never any touch with the material energy. There's a kind of go-between Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, the reflection, what a dim reflection of the transcendental effulgence, he comes in touch with the material energy and acts on Krishna's behalf. But Krishna never touches the material nature. Here also, but then after going through all that, you know, expanding his plenary portion to get in touch with the Durga, then why is he going to get involved with householder life? You know, even as the Mahavishnu, he's not going to touch the material nature. So why should he get involved in householder life? That's not Krishna's business. But Sriratna, these women were not women of this material world. They're all manifestation of Krishna's internal energy. What was that we were reading? Pratibhavita birta birya eva nijarupataya kalabhi. What's the beginning? Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhava Tabiri Eva Nijita Rupa Kala Rupataya Kalabi Goloka Eva Nivasacha Kilani Bhuta. So Krishna expands himself in so many forms. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradumna, Aniruddha, so many different avatars, Ram, Nrsinga, and so on. As Krishna expands himself, so his energy also expands herself. As Krishna expands himself as Narayan, Srimati Radharani expands herself as Lakshmi. When Krishna expands himself as Lord Ramchandra, Srimati Radharani expands herself as Sita Devi. So these, similarly, the goddesses of fortune in the queens in Dwarka, they're also expansions of Krishna's internal energy. They're expansions of Krishna's internal energy. They're not like the ordinary women, and certainly not like the ordinary women of this material world. In the material world, it's all designations or superimpositions. We're soul, but we're stamped man, woman, child, according to a particular body imposed upon us. So that's not our real identity. It's just something we're stuck with for some time or bewildered with for some time. But that's... and the identity falls apart also. The guy is, you know, the young John Wayne or something, you know, he's a... imitation of Shambhu. That's also there. The conditioned souls, they sort of pick up from Shambhu this false ego, really. And so it's, you know, they become macho, they become tough guys or whatever. And the women become counterparts, feminine counterparts. You know, young, whatever the drama is. But then it all falls apart. They're in their 40s. You know, the young, tough guy's got a pot belly and a balding head, and he's working 9 to 5 in a crummy job. And the young girl is going to see, has an appointment for electrolysis to get the lines removed from wherever, and pull the face together and all of that. So it all ends up as a sort of a horror show, or just crumbling. Everything starts to deteriorate and fall apart because it's not real. Is not real. This identity, man and woman, is not permanently enjoyable, certainly, if enjoyable at all. And it's actually a source of trouble for the conditioned souls. But for Krishna, Krishna is actually the only qualified person to enjoy. Everyone else is trying, but no one else can make it. But Krishna is actually the enjoyer. That's his nature. Everyone else is meant to give enjoyment to Krishna. So Krishna, when he's married, it's not the thing that we see here. The Kaviraj Goswami's example is that the difference is like that between iron and gold. Someone would say, well, it's all the same, it's all metal. But it's not all the same, all metal. If you ordered a pound of gold and I give you a pound of iron, then there'll be a lawsuit. There'll be, and the lawyers will get all the gold. So there's a big difference between gold and iron. So householder life is householder life, but when it's Krishna's householder life, it's a completely different thing. It's not of the same gross nature as the householder life of this material world. The women amongst whom Krishna lived as their husband are not therefore women of this mundane world, but are eternally related with him as transcendental wives, a position which they attained by perfection of devotional service. That is their competency. The Lord is Parabrahma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Conditioned souls seek after perpetual happiness in all places, not only on this earth, but also on other planets throughout the universe, because constitutionally a spiritual spark, as he is, can travel to any part of God's creation. But being conditioned by the material modes, he tries to travel in space by spacecraft, and so fails to reach his destination. The law of gravitation is binding upon him like the shackles of a prisoner. By other processes, he can reach anywhere, but even if he reaches the highest planet, he cannot attain that perpetual happiness for which he is searching life after life. When he comes to his senses, however, he seeks after Brahma happiness, knowing it for certain that unlimited happiness, which he is seeking, is never attainable in the material world. As such, the Supreme Being, Parabrahma, certainly does not seek his happiness anywhere in the material world, nor can his paraphernalia of happiness be found in the material world. He is not impersonal because he is the leader and supreme being amongst innumerable living beings. He cannot be impersonal. He's exactly like us and has all the propensities of an individual living being in fullness. He marries exactly like us, but his marriage is neither mundane nor limited by our experience in the conditioned state. His wives, therefore, appear like mundane women, but factually they are all transcendental, liberated souls, perfect manifestations of internal energy. Prabhupada makes the point here that the transcendentalists give up material happiness. Someone becomes attracted to Krishna, he loses interest in the material energy. Then why should Krishna be interested in the material energy? He even gave this argument to Rukmini, that my devotees are not very much interested in householder life, so I'm not very interested either. He's teasing her that I'm going to give up your company. My devotees aren't very much interested in material enjoyment, material happiness, material householder life, so why should I be interested? But Prabhupada's taking that argument here in a more literal or serious vein, that Krishna's devotees, when they become attracted to Krishna, give up. They lose the taste for material enjoyment. Param drishtva nivartate. So if even the Krishna's devotees have no taste for it, why should Krishna have a taste for it? That's the point. We're looking for happiness here. Sarvagata, the living entity, can go anywhere subject to conditions. We can go to other planets by worshipping the demigods or performing austerities in the yoga system, or the way the scientists are trying to do it by, what do they call that? Brute force. Brute force, right? When you try to break a code by just throwing all the possibilities at it, it's called a brute force attack, right? So by brute force, they're trying to go to other planets. But they're brutes. So they can't force their way in. Brute force doesn't work for going to the heavenly planets. And so instead they have to make a show. Yeah, we went, but we didn't really like it there, so we decided not to stay. So, yeah, a bluff. And we went, but it's not very interesting. I don't know if we'll go back. It's not much there for us. It means they couldn't go. But even if they could go, what would they do? There was some launch. I don't follow these launches very carefully, but there was some launch, and they were going to send, you know, a mixed company into outer space, men and women. And then the journalists started sort of speculating, and you know, the idea was well, wonder what sex is like in outer space. But that's about what you could think of. What are you going to do in outer space? Well, eat, sleep, have sex, and fend off whoever the competitors are. What is that? You send a mortar and pestle to heaven, and it'll still just grind. Even if we go to outer space, what will we do there? What will we do there? They'll sell tickets. You can go to outer space and have sex. You can do that down here. There's not, or they go to Niagara Falls or, you know, the Bahamas and spend all that money so that they can have sex in the Bahamas. You could have sex in New York City. What's the big thing? Stay, or, you know, Palo Alto. What's the gain? So they'll go to the heavenly planets, and it'll be the same thing. Puna punas charva to charva nana. Chewing the chewed again and again. So they're trying for happiness, but even if they go to outer space, or even if they go to the heavenly planets, it'll be the same thing, dressed up a different way, lasting, their life will last longer, they'll have stronger bodies, more beautiful, this, that. At the end, it comes to the same thing, that you have to die and you have to fall down again to some miserable lower species. Gatagatam kama kama labhante, Krishna says, by all of their fruitive activities. Gatagatam, they go up and they come down. They go up and they go, what goes up must come down. Limited by the law of gravitation, Prabhupada says. So even if they go to the heavenly planets, they just have to come back. So gatagatam, coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. It's like, for what? So nowhere in this material world will the living beings be satisfied. And that's our experience. We never reach a point where we say, this is it, now we've captured eternal happiness, we're completely satisfied. It's always some sort of disappointment. Dukkhaliyam ashashvatam. So why is Krishna going to get involved with that? He has no interest in this business. Working hard for 10th rate fleeting happiness. That's not Krishna's business. Anandam Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. That's Krishna's business. Chinmaya, the Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, the relationships there are all based on spiritual fact, not on the material body. The material body is the poor covering for the unfortunate living being. But in the spiritual platform, everything is factual. It's all, we can hardly imagine. We do everything with our material bodies. But Krishna doesn't have a material body. Nor do these wives of Krishna. They're not materially embodied souls. It's a whole different story. They don't have gross material bodies. Neither Krishna nor his wives. Their bodies are ananda chinmaya rasa, spiritual bodies. They're made of the superior energy. None of the limitations or shortcomings or defects or nastiness of this material conditioned life. Their bodies are spiritual. Their bodies are spiritual. Krishna's body is spiritual. Everything, the palaces are spiritual. Our homes are on loan from the material energy. Our bodies are on loan from the material energy. But Krishna's form, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's abode, Krishna's everything are all transcendental. So when the conditioned soul comes to his senses, that's where he's attracted. And Krishna, by his causeless mercy, is giving that picture. Here's how I'm enjoying with my eternal associates. So don't stay here and try to squeeze some enjoyment out of this material energy. You come to the spiritual world. And in these transcendental relationships, you'll see, you'll find everything. Okay. Questions? Comments?
Thank you very much, Mara.
Thank you.
In the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, the women amongst whom he lived as their husband are not therefore women of this mundane world, but are eternally related with him as transcendental wives, the position they attain by perfection of devotional service. This is their competency. I was just wondering if you could say more about attaining higher levels of competency. How can we become more competent?
Chant Hare Krishna.
Especially in this this sort of a second part of it, anticipating the first part for your first answer, that. It seems to me that people have less and less time due to the force of material nature these days. In other words, devotees used to move into an ashram and spend a lot of time training for months and years. And nowadays, there's a little bit less contact time.
A little less?
Contact time with some of the primary activities of devotional service, like Mangalartik, and sitting together to chant, and so on and so forth. Devotees innovate to do these kinds of things, but in many places I see it's not as prevalent as, for instance, when in the beginning of the movement. Mm. So I was asking also for some advice from your point of view about how, in that environment, devotees can become more competent.
Well, to give a radical answer, Prabhupada said, you know, why stay in that environment? We're in like a big city environment, working for Microsoft or whoever, and slugging it out and commuting and the whole business. And Prabhupada, you know, looked at it and said, what kind of life is this? And therefore he was pushing farm communities. That why live this artificial life where you have no time because you got to get up, you know, 2 hours before work so that you can drive an hour and a half, and then you can work all day and drive another hour and a half back, and then this and that, and you know, it's just is horrible. Ugra karma. That was Prabhupada's word. Nasty work. Ugra karma. Just an artificial, this is what we've devised for happiness. We have an advanced civilization where you can be happy by working like an ass and having no time and no spiritual activities and just work. Prabhupada looked at it and said, why? And therefore he was recommending to get out of the cities and live in these, in Krishna's creation, not in the creation of the demons, but in Prabhupada said, anyone can grow food. He said, it's not difficult. Anyone can grow food. Anywhere in the world. You Prabhupada said, you get a cottage, and some of the time you spend for agricultural activities, and the rest of the time is yours. Chanting Hare Krishna, reading Bhagavatam, all of that. So that was one answer Prabhupada gave. Why, swim against the current? Why stay in this terrible atmosphere trying to squeeze out half an hour or 10 minutes or a weekend or a vacation of 5 days? Why do that? Just get out of the whole thing and live someplace decent. That means where Krishna's creation is still there. Live with devotees and chant Hare Krishna. And then you have tons of time. Then you have time for everything. And Prabhupada saw and foresaw that just householders especially just slugging it out wouldn't have much opportunity for spiritual culture, comparatively speaking. That they would just be working hard, as a night watchman or a this or a that, and not have time. So why do that? Go live someplace where there's a natural environment, where there's everything reminds us of Krishna, where there's devotees, where you get, even to get your own food. Like here in the cities, you pay premium prices to get, some shipped in something from somewhere. And if you have your own tree, you get it yourself. The same, double price premium thing. You just go to a tree and pick it. Or you grow it in the ground and pick it. So why even? Yeah, everything's water. Do you go and spend huge amounts of money or disproportionate amounts of money to get clean water? Clean water is like basic provision in Krishna's arrangement. You stick a bottle in the river or the stream and you get water. I mean, what is this big thing about water? But we've made such a mess of things that just water is like a premium commodity. Water. And in some places, air. They've got something I was hearing in Delhi, these little shops you go in, and you can get a hit of air, which is otherwise unavailable. So that's the next big thing is air. Water is, land is hard to get. Earth, water, fire. And even fire, you can't just build a fire. You've got to have gas piped in or a canister. You can't just build a fire. You'll have all the authorities coming down on your head. Earth, water, fire, air. They're all unavailable, except at a premium. Sky, earth, water, fire, air, and sky. You can't get that either because it's, totally blocked out with everything they've spewed into it. Earth, water, fire, air, sky. And you can't get your mind together either under those circumstances. And the company wants your intelligence. So Prabhupada was very serious about this, that we should get out of this environment and show the ideal thing. And actually, when Prabhupada was saying it, it wasn't even cutting edge yet. It probably was just Prabhupada saying it. Now, if we'd been doing that since 1977, Hare Krishna movement would be absolutely in the forefront of modern aspirations. You know, if we could say, we've been doing this since 40 years. Here's how you do it, and here's what we get from it. We would be absolutely out front. Absolutely out front. Anyway, that was one solution. But maybe that's not what you had in mind. But that's one. Then, all right. If we're here, then we somehow or other make arrangements. By our temples, by phone conferences, by get-togethers, and by home programs, and by serious sadhana in our own homes, by all these different means, we put it together. And that's also possible if one's serious. Is that okay? What else?
There is in the purport reference to Brahman happiness. Is that the highest form of happiness, or it's still a stage in a higher form of happiness?
Let's see what Prabhupada's context is for Brahman happiness. Yeah, Brahma Sokyam Tvanantam. So Brahman happiness ultimately means happiness in Krishna consciousness. Krishna is Brahma, Param Brahma. So Brahman happiness ultimately means the happiness of devotional service. The impersonalists, they have an idea of Brahman happiness, but that's an incomplete realization of Brahman happiness. That Brahman happiness is the water in the hoof print of the calf compared to the ocean. So real Brahman happiness is Krishna consciousness. Okay.
So the term Brahman is used interchangeably. It's not always that Brahman happiness is impersonal or merging into the effulgence, Brahma Jyoti. It can be used in a bigger context as well.
Yeah, Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya someplace, told that wherever you see that word Brahma, just that means Krishna. You edit it. You take out Brahma and put in Krishna, because Krishna is Param Brahma. So when it says that we have to reach Brahma, we have to attain Brahma, the happiness is in Brahma, all of this Brahma stuff, it means Krishna, because he's Param Brahma. But incompletely realized, it means the impersonal Brahma. Fully realized, it means Krishna.
I had another question where you were talking about Krishna's activities in the material world, that they are transcendental. Mm. And you said that our activities in the material world are entangling. Mm. He doesn't get entangled. And one is to see that. In fact, Krishna has come here and he's showing it. But in order for people to see conditioned souls, that his activities are transcendental, he is here in the material world, wouldn't they need a higher level of awareness to be able to say that Krishna has come here just like us, but he's not making contact with material energy, he's staying on the spiritual platform, and that what he's demonstrating is a message for us to realize and go back to the material world. In order to appreciate that, wouldn't people require some higher level of realization?
Tad vigyanartam sagurum eva bigachet. they require the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master in order to understand. Otherwise, by our own efforts, we see, or our own impressions, we see it to be like Krishna's an ordinary person or a mythical hero or this or that or the other thing. But vimutha nanu pashanti pashanti gana chakshusha. By our own blunt senses, we won't see. We have to see with eyes of knowledge. That's actual seeing. And those eyes of knowledge we get by hearing from pure devotee. Then we can see. Prabhupada gave the example sometime, I'm paraphrasing it, but more or less, that, you know, if the Queen of England were to walk in the door, to our blunt senses, she's just an old lady. But if we hear that this is the Queen of England, then the whole picture changes. Otherwise, to our blunt sense perception, yeah, it's just another old lady. That's all she is. But when we hear that this is the Queen of England, then the picture changes. We probably gave the example that you see the sun, it's just a little ball in the sky. But when you hear from the scientists, it's 93 million miles away, and it's got this and this and this, and then the seeing changes. Bimudha nanu pashanti. The fools won't see that way. They don't see through the eyes of authority. But that's how we have to see. Pashanti gana chakshusha.
Maharaj, I have a question. At what stage of life we need to go and live in the form communities? Like you mentioned, like we are already habituated.
From birth is good.
Like one of devotees talking to me, he mentioned he went to form community and stayed in the silent. He can't, unable to chant. So he is habituated for the sound, yeah, noise.
That's there. I was in Gitanagari with one devotee. He had a nice house that he built himself and was out in the middle of, you know, the fields. He brought me up to like his kind of rooftop, said, "You hear that?" I said, "No." "You hear that?" I said, "No, I don't hear anything." He said, "That's it, there's nothing." There's nothing there. This is our problem. We're addicted to a citified, artificial way of life. And it takes some... therefore, those who get a good start, like from birth, they, you know, they can actually enjoy, you can say. You know, they'll be happy with these simple things. And it's our misfortune that we've gotten... that we've grown up in an artificial environment so that we're not satisfied with anything. And that even, you know, when we talk about natural living, we don't know how to do it. You know, the average man, if you brought him out to the country and told him that there were no drugstores, he wouldn't know how to brush his teeth. Right? How do you brush your teeth? There's no toothpaste. Where do I get a toothbrush? If you know, you know. But if you don't know, it's like, what am I doing here? There's nothing. And in that way, so many other, you know, even basic necessities. How do I get that? How do I get that? And therefore, people, when they make a compromise, simple living means to live in the suburbs or in a semi-rural place where you're not more than 15 minutes from the Walmart so that you can have your cake and eat it too. But it doesn't really work that way. The eat it too part winds up eating you so that you have the convenience of the local food store and your teenage kids have the convenience of the local clubs. So it takes some adjustment. It takes some adjustment. At first we may feel that this is, you know, why am I living like this? This is horrible, you know. Where's my this and where's my that? You know, where's the comforting sound of the cars rushing down the freeway? But if one is serious about it, then one learns how to do all these things. You know, how to grow your own food. And I was listening to Prabhupada yesterday. He was talking about frozen food. He said, no taste, no nothing. You know, he said, it's horrible. But he said, in India, especially in the villages, it's at the season when the things are growing so much, you get so much. He said, and then when we cut it up and dry it, so that through the rest of the year it's available, you mix that with water, and Prabhupada said it's tasteful. It revives its nature. All of these things used to be known. I mean, it's not unique to India. America used to have all sorts of ways to be happy. You know, they knew how to cook, they knew how to bake, they knew how to preserve things, they knew how to take advantage of Krishna's arrangement. And now they've outsmarted themselves. They've developed a civilization which is so advanced that no one can be happy. So Prabhupada was in favor of, you know, abandoning the project, really, going in the opposite direction and saying, don't make it more complicated, make it more simple. Don't live in these pandemonium cities. Live in the country which is made by Krishna. And yeah, because we're all revved up in the mode of passion, what do we do? So we have to cultivate the mode of goodness and cultivate Krishna consciousness, and then we'll be happy. Then we'll actually be, yes, this is nice.
Mm-hmm. Hare Krishna. I have to admit that growing up in Krishna consciousness movement, although there were some farms, I was raised on Prabhupada's, both were there obviously because there were farms, but I was also raised on the feeling that stay in the city. As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, you know, Prabhupada fed us that. Then he said, we don't stay in the country. We go, you know, we go into the city,
well,
and where the people, Prahlad Maharaj.
That's not for living. That's for preaching.
Still, I grew up in airports, and I always felt like as we were growing up that push was on. And I almost never went to farms. I'd stay one day and I'd go home because I was like, I got to get back to, you know.
Well, that's a whole different world.
That still lingers, you know. I'm just admitting, I'm burying my soul. In my mind, I feel like I'm on the farm, you know, I got to get back. And
yeah. Well, that's the other side. I mean, I'm not a farm kid either. That's just for living. If you're looking for a place to live and have time and be peaceful and cultivate Krishna consciousness, what are you doing in the city? But if you want to preach Krishna consciousness, then the city is great. It's got, you know, they don't have any airports in the country. If they do, they're military. This is the place for preaching. People are abundant, affluent, miserable. Well, they have all the good qualifications. So to be in the city is fantastic. And then you're in Krishna consciousness, first class. If you're preaching, then to be in the city is transcendental pleasure. Then it's the transcendental pleasure because there's every opportunity in every direction. I mean, as a farmer gets his pleasure from, you know, watching the potatoes grow or something, the devotees get their pleasure in the cities by spreading Krishna consciousness, harvesting devotee. You know, there you harvest harvest carrots or something. So if you can harvest devotees, that's the first class crop. That's the best. So that's a different thing. Yeah, that's wonderful. to be in the cities, but kind of to do like, well, I'm in the city for preaching, but really I'm in the city because I don't know what else to do, and I hardly preach at all, and I don't even get a chance to chant, and it's just, you know, I used to have a spiritual life, I don't know what happened. Then, you know, why live like that? But if you're actually preaching, then the cities are wonderful. Or if somehow by circumstance you're stuck in the city, well, you're stuck in a place where there's great preaching. So preach and be happy. Is that...
That satisfies my soul. Thank you. But I have one other extension of that, is sort of a third category, and that is that I've seen nowadays that some of the farm projects that are so extraordinary attract people, and they actually become both. They become farm and preaching. Like, for instance, I've heard, I haven't been there yet, I'm going in September, but in Hungary, that Shiva Maharaj and the devotees there have developed a self-sufficient farm community, and now Keshav Bharti Maharaj was just telling me busloads of people come every day to come and look at a, you know, see what a cow looks like, or, you know, it's see how things actually grow in the ground. And that's also a possibility.
That's also a possibility. Just want to make sure that you don't become dependent on the busloads of people coming for your self-sufficient farm community, because then your self-sufficient farm community depends on the busloads, and you've lost everything. So the busloads may come, and we may encourage them to come, and maybe very happy that they come. But if they don't come, we should still be, we should be prepared that if they don't come, we'll carry on, because that's not our source of livelihood. Our source of livelihood is the land and Krishna's arrangement.
The same discussion of farm communities. One recommendation is for living purposes to go there. And then we come back to the situation that cities are okay for preaching. And then we also have the verse of Brahma to Lord Krishna about this Gnane prayasam udapasya namanta eva stane stita shruti gatam tanu man one manobir, which is cited very often in our classes. Also, it says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to say, don't change your position, take up devotional service. Stay in the position that you are, the social position, and yet, with your mind, bodies, and activities dedicated to Krishna, you will surely be able to realize Him. In fact, says that otherwise Krishna is not even conquerable, but He can be conquered this way. So this advice that is there from Shastra, aside from living in cities, preaching, wouldn't it also apply to working people, that they are working, but they have taken on devotional service? Is it needed for them to go to farm communities? Because the import of this verse also was to actually dissuade people from just taking up renunciation, going to the forest. You know, it was like, want to know God, go to the forest. No, you can stay in your social position, take up devotional service, but yet realize Him. Wouldn't that be also practical?
Yeah. Therefore, devotional service is multifaceted. It's not stereotyped. It's not that everybody has to do this or everybody has to do that or everybody has to do the third thing. That everybody has to be a book distributor or everybody has to be a pujari or everybody has to go out and chant on the streets, or everybody has to, you know, full-time, or everybody has to do X, Y, or Z. There are lots of different ways to be Krishna conscious. So Maharaj Prataparudra was a king. He didn't have to quit being a king. He was pure devotee. And there's so many other examples, physicians among Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates and sabji sellers and so many things. So one doesn't have, so Gyane Prayasam, Stane Stita Shrutigatam, that's the real thing. But then Prabhupada was considering what's a favorable or congenial environment. If you have some
responsibility or some reason to be in the city. But looking from another point of view, if you don't have a reason to be there, why be there? I mean, you look at it, if you say, Gyane, Stane, Stata, Shruti, Gatam, but you look and see when you're looking for a job, where's there a good working environment? These days, women, you know, where do they have good childcare facilities? You know, where is the work ethic? Or the, you know, do I have to punch a clock every day or do I have flexible hours? You look and say, where's it congenial? Even if you're a karmi, you look at it that way and say, you know, where am I going to get something that's like fits my way of life? Or maybe I'll work at home and you know, do it by remote and not have to do the commute. Everybody looks at it and says, how can I get a congenial environment? So Prabhupada's looking at it and saying, if you want a congenial environment, what are you doing in the city to begin with? If your business is to cultivate Krishna consciousness and you don't have some overriding reason to be in the city, why be in the city? Especially, I think, because he saw practically that people will come and the society is not orderly. Varnashram society is orderly. So a person's a Brahmin is employed as a Brahmin. A person who's a Kshatriya is employed as a Kshatriya. Everyone has a prescribed duty to perform, and it all fits together for advancement toward Krishna consciousness. But in the present day, everything's screwed up. People have no proper engagement, they're misengaged, or they're engaged in something which is of no utility. You know, his engagement is to get people to figure out how to persuade people to buy something they don't need at a price they can't afford. That's a job. How to persuade people. You know, he's got a PhD, and his PhD is used to figure out diabolical ways to persuade people to buy something they don't need at prices they can't afford. I mean, even on an international level, there are people who are employed that way. How to persuade a country to spend money it doesn't have for an infrastructure it doesn't need. So that's called Ugra Karma. So Prabhupada looked at it and said, or in that Ugra Karma situation, you know, the ordinary person, he has no, even his employment is not even satisfying. It's a job. It's just a job. It's not providing some, you know, previously if you were a Vartanwala, so everybody needs spoons and forks and plates and something. Now I'm selling something that has no meaning. No meaning, no use, no contribution. It's just contribution to an artificial way of life. So it's not helpful to others. It's not satisfying to me. Often it's outright destructive. So rather than carry and I don't even get paid enough. Look at what it is. You don't even get paid. You know, people work hard like anything, and then the government takes, you know, huge share of it just in taxes, and then it gives you the rest so that you can spend it and again get taxed on every dollar you spend. And what's the number one thing people spend on these days? No, it's not food. 20 or 30 years ago, it was food. What is it that people spend the largest proportion of their income on?
Insurance.
No, not insurance.
Housing.
It used to be food and housing.
Medical?
No.
Is it entertainment?
No.
Clothing?
No. Food, clothing, shelter, it's none of the above.
Yes,
transportation. The biggest component of families' household expenses today is the cost of transportation. which mainly means going to and from your job. You're working hard to get money to go to work and get back again. What is that? These are U.S. government figures that the highest proportion is the cost of transportation. In Krishna's arrangement, your transportation is you walk out the door, you walk down the road, and you get to work. So Prabhupada was seeing people are being like squeezed, working hard just to pay to go to work. And maybe on top of that, there's childcare because the wife is working. So why is she working? She's working to pay for the childcare. On top of the transportation. You know, at the end of it all, what's left? And where? And what to speak of your time for spiritual cultivation? Even just materially, it's almost unbearable. And people may not be able to juggle it. You know, Prabhupada was seeing that people, his disciples, were not always doing so well in sthane stata shrutigatam, you know, working hard in the city and being Krishna conscious and chanting their rounds and doing all that stuff. Prabhupada saw that they would get sucked under. So this was his idea, that go to a place where it's all about Krishna consciousness. You know, it's all about the deities and chanting Hare Krishna, and the occupation is simple, and the expenses are minimal, and it's all connected with Krishna's arrangement. You'll think of Krishna while you're doing it. It's productive. You're in bare necessities. You're not in an extravagant way of life, forced into an extravagant way of life. So that's one solution. Another solution is to be right in the middle of the city preaching. Another is that, you're not a big preacher, but you're engaged in the service of the Lord by your body, mind, and words in other ways. You're hearing, you're chanting, you're serving the deity. There's so many different ways to be Krishna consciousness, not a cookie cutter that everything has to fit one pattern. But this certainly Prabhupada gave a lot of importance to as a practical thing that, what is it? There's a word, not replicable, but extensible. You know, where you can take a model and you can duplicate it and replicate it and expand it. This is, you know, this civilization, the more you expand it, the worse it gets. But what Prabhupada was talking about, you extend it and you extend it and you extend it, just gets better. The more you downsize, the more you live simply, the more you cooperate with Krishna's arrangement, the better it gets. So Prabhupada wanted to push that. Even as, you know, for the ordinary people, invite the ordinary person to come live with us, live on your own land, grow your own food, and the rest will come. You know, you're hanging out with us, you'll chant Hare Krishna also. You know, just because people will find it so unbearable to live under these crazy circumstances, as we're finding now. Now, you know, the present moment, there are intelligent people who are thinking, it can't be like this, it can't go on like this. And they're looking at the Amish, and they're looking at, you know, other alternative intentional communities, because it's sensible. Just materially speaking. Apura.
My doubt or my devil's advocate is going to be feedback. That, you know, for the last, I don't know, several hundred years, the countries who, I mean, we all used to live more close to the nature. Everyone was on a family farm, and in China, and there's peasants, you know, Pearl Buck, the good earth, or whatever. In India, the villages, its strength is its villages. You know, there's been this tradition, but the countries that were industrialized in international competition were more successful. The people became wealthier and happier. They had a stronger military. They had more power in so many ways.
They had a stronger military. What's this happier thing?
Well, maybe they're not. They were attracted. You know, people were attracted to that.
Fish is attracted to the bait. Also, that doesn't mean he becomes happier.
It seems like the governments are falling over themselves to be able to industrialize their countries.
To sell out their countries. They're traitors, actually. They're falling all over themselves to sell out their countries. That's the real story. And, you know, quite literally, that, you know, you sell out your country and we will give you this. Africa, I'm working in Africa these days, it's like prototypical policy. We put some guy in there as our puppet. We give him everything he wants for sense gratification. He gives us all the mineral rights, all the petroleum rights, all the water rights, all the, you know, trade rights, everything like that. And he's happy and we're happy. We sell out. I sell out my country. And India's not an exception. I was just reading peripherally. It was in the newspaper while I was flying somewhere. This Naxalite business is going on, and the government is trying to put down these Naxalites, who are terrorists, basically, who are trying to disrupt the normal life of India. And so the Indian government is bringing in the army. The Indian government is bringing in foreign advisors and, you know, from Israel and this place and that place and munitions and strategy. And somehow we got to curb these guys because they're just creating terror all over the country. Well, that's one story. The other story is that these are the local people, that their land is in the process of being sold out to multinational corporations, that their whole life is being disrupted, that they have no political power because the political power has been sold to the vested interests, and that peaceful, non-cooperation of all that looks good when you have an audience, but when you don't have an audience, it's of no utility. And so what can you do? Okay, you start bombing trucks and bombing installation, you know, corporate headquarters and all that kind of stuff. And well, that's a serious problem because we promised Exxon that they would have access to such and such, and, you know, now there's a fly in the ointment. And so the deal is being disrupted. So we have to get rid of those flies in the ointment so that the profits can start being made. It means selling out the actual interests of the people of the country for vested interests of another country. Yeah, it's just politics. But India or Africa or South America or any place. Even, you know, America, somebody wants to build a casino. It's documented right, left, and center that casino means that your city goes to hell, your quality of life plummets, your safety plummets, your police force has to double, triple, and quadruple, that crime goes through the roof, that a simple, you know, community is no longer anywhere near the picture, that the mobs are going to move in, all of this. And yet, place after place, they basically sell out You know, we're going to get a casino and it's going to solve all our problems. And so they sell out everything for a degraded monstrosity. Yeah, in America also. You know, places that were like nice places to live. You know, now it's the site of a, you know, the Grand Whorehouse. It's not just sort of a gradual deterioration. There's also a explicit, calculated, hugely well-funded, and powerful effort to bring it down, or to introduce a way of life which is degraded, to introduce values and, enterprises that you know, hang the degradation, it makes money. Hang what it does to people, it makes money. The tobacco industry, just as an example. You know, nobody knows more about the effects of tobacco or has known more for decades about the effects of tobacco than the tobacco industry. They know, you know, now you see all these signs, Surgeon General has determined, you didn't need the Surgeon General, the tobacco companies knew it 40 years ago. But so what if we're killing people, we're making money? It's our job. Pharmaceutical industry, you know, they know what kind of cheating they're doing. This whole, what was that swine flu thing? It's just a total scam. But, you know, we're making money. The pharmaceutical industry, the, you know, what to speak of the military industry. Enormous, you know, just, it's not just routine, humdrum, pedestrian degradation. It's revved up, PhD, 4-star general degradation. You know, it's the most talented, most capable, most resourceful and well-endowed people in the world pushing enterprises which are ugra karma, which are destructive, corrosive to human welfare. I mean, just war is a, you know, what's the word? Extraneous, unnecessary war. I mean, there's war where you're attacked and you have to defend yourself, and then there's war where you're just grabbing other people's property for your own greed. The last figure I saw for excess deaths in Iraq was 1.5 million people. 1.2, that was the last number I saw, but it was a long time ago. That's an awful lot of people to kill. And, you know, and you sell it as freedom and democracy and all of that kind of stuff, but anyone who's been around the block a few times knows better than that. It's vicious. 16th chapter, one of my favorite chapters. You know, Krishna calls it exactly what it is. Diversion from the topic, but something else? Stop here? Tell me what to do.
We can have a group with you and then we can go out and try to do something about this.
Okay. Good.
House to house, door to door.
Door to door.
Go tell people what you just said.
Gopremanande.
Jai.
Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. J